Well, our text for today's message is 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to be looking at just four verses, verses 24 through 27, in a sermon entitled, Finishing Well. Well, we are a little more than halfway through our series in the book of 1 Corinthians entitled, Awake But Asleep. In this letter to the church he founded just 5 years earlier, the Apostle Paul is writing to correct a congregation that was morally asleep and dominated by sin. This morning we're looking at chapter 9, and we'll be looking at this four verses starting at verse 24. Someone has characterized today's world as a place of passion for the immediate and casual. Everyone is in a hurry. The acquisition of patient virtue is quickly vanishing, even in the Church of Jesus Christ. I am finding in greater measure than ever before the people whom I counsel, visit, pray with, preach to, and teach want shortcuts. They are impatient for results. They have adopted the thinking and lifestyle of a tourist in the Christian life and only want the high points. The problem is this. The pastor is not a tour guide, and the Christian life cannot grow at a spiritual drive-through window. The Christian life cannot mature under the wrong assumption that righteous living can somehow be achieved by shortcuts. I am convinced that God teaches that discipleship requires a long obedience in the same direction, and that is exactly Paul's point to the Corinthians. The believers in Corinth were taking spiritual shortcuts, thinking it would still allow them to become fully devoted followers of God and meet with his approval. They were wrong, and the Apostle Paul sets them straight in today's text. In these four verses at the end of chapter 9, he focuses their attention on endurance and perseverance. Throughout the New Testament, there are many warnings and exhortations for believers to endure to the end. While our salvation is quite certain and totally secure, our success in the Christian life and ministries is not. That's why the scriptures teach that living for God's approval requires finishing well. In verse 24, Paul tells us to run the Christian race with the intent to win the prize at the end of the race. He writes, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize?" Paul begins with the question, "Do you not know?" He is confident that his readers already know the answer, that in any race there can only be one winner. Fortunately, Paul uses plural verbs, and the exhortation is not you singular, but you plural. Paul is saying you all run in such a way that you all may win. The prize is offered to each and every believer. Unlike a foot race, we're not competing against each other. Every Christian can win the prize. That's the good news, because there will always be someone faster, stronger, or smarter than us. But that's okay, because you and I are running against opportunities God gives us, not what he gives to other Christians. We are competing against ourselves. The running metaphor works like this. When a person believes in Jesus Christ, he or she becomes a runner in the Christian race. So, if you are a Christian, whether you like it or not, you are a runner. Paul finishes verse 24 with these words, "Run in such a way as to get the prize." Paul issues a command, run, don't walk, don't stop, don't sit down, run, because you can win the prize. After all, the point of entry race is to win the prize. To be crystal clear, the prize does not represent salvation. Salvation is a free gift. The prize is an earned reward. Paul is not discussing salvation in this context. The prize that Paul is speaking of is a reward that may or may not accompany salvation. The Christian's prize is the honor and glory of eternal rewards. It is the joy of hearing Jesus say, "Well done." We receive salvation as a free gift, and then the Lord blesses us on top of that with eternal rewards for faithfully serving Him. So what does faithful running look like? Who are those who run in such a way that they may get the prize? For example, they are Christians who finish their lives still growing in the Lord and still serving Him. Or senior saints who persist in daily prayer until the Lord calls them home. Husbands and wives who stay faithful to each other till death do us part. Or young people who stay pure until marriage in spite of crushing peer pressure. Or pastors who stay passionate about ministry until their last breath. Or church members who weather the rough patches and remain joyful, loving, and faithful. Well, today you may be thinking, "I'm not running well. In fact, I'm barely in the race at all. What should I do?" The answer is recommit to win God's race. As long as you are in the race, run to win. Don't just run to finish, but to win. Because no one just happens to make a comeback to win. Not when he is far behind. Only by believing it can happen and with a renewed resolve to win is a comeback accomplished. If you find yourself far behind in the race, don't give up. Keep on running. You can still win. Don't quit. Because living for God's approval requires finishing well. Well, then in verse 25, Paul commends the commitment of athletes who will sacrifice everything to win the temporary prize. Listen to these words. "Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever." The phrase translated "competes in the games" comes from the Greek word that we get our word "agony" or "agonize" from. So Paul is talking about some pretty intense competition here. Verse 25 also tells us that competing for the prize requires strict training or self-control. Paul's analogy brought to mind the Isthmian Games held each year in Corinth. All of the events in these games were one-person individual sports. It required many months and even years of sacrificial discipline and rigorous self-control. These athletes kept a strict diet. They made sure they got the proper amount of sleep each night. They trained daily for their particular events. They performed strength and cardiovascular exercises. They often abstained from drinking and immorality. All of this with the hope of winning their particular event. And why did these athletes go to such great lengths? They did it to obtain a crown that will not last. A simple vegetable crown of celery or parsley. As you might imagine, this crown eventually withers away. It is here one day and gone the next. Now, if athletes are willing to undergo this type of discipline and training, how much more should we as servants of the Lord Jesus Christ? For unlike the athletic crown, our victor's crown will affect our forever and ever. Paul states that our reward will last forever. It is eternal. Hearing Jesus say, "Well done," is no small matter. Think about that for just a moment. Only what you and I do for Jesus Christ will last, and it will last and last and last. Forever is a long time, and we only have 70 or 80 years to invest in eternity. That's why Jonathan Edwards, an early New England pastor, prayed, "Lord, stamp eternity on my eyeballs." We must run for the prize because living for God's approval requires finishing well. I realize that very few people would say self-control is one of their greatest strengths. Yet Paul tells us that self-control is necessary if we are to win the prize. So, let me ask you, in what areas of your life do you need to exercise self-control? Do you need to exercise self-control in your media intake? Do you watch too much TV? Do you play too many video games? Do you surf the web for too many hours? Do you spend more time on Facebook than in God's Word or investing in personal relationships? Do you need to exercise self-control in your leisure? Do you spend too much time working out? Does your hobby come in the way of your relationship with God and your family? Do you need to exercise self-control in your friendships? Are your friends more important to you than God? Are your friends keeping you from being all that God wants you to be? Do you need to exercise self-control over an addiction? Is food a drug to you? Do you drink or smoke too much? Are you addicted to sleep? The Christian life demands discipline. Now, once again, let me clarify that the Christian life is not a race to win entrance into heaven. We are saved by grace, not by effort or discipline or obedience or good works or anything else. We are saved by believing, not achieving. We are saved for good works, not by good works. Still, the Christian life is a race to accomplish what God put us here for, a race to present ourselves approved unto God, a race to finish in a way so as to hear God say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." For living for God's approval requires finishing well. Well, now in verses 26 and 27, Paul is going to tell us how to avoid losing in our Christian race. He puts it like this in verse 26. "Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air." Therefore, Paul often uses this word to reflect on what he has previously said. He has just stated that the prize lasts for eternity. Therefore, he writes that he doesn't run aimlessly, for only those headed in the right direction qualify for the prize. Imagine you're at a cross-country meet. The runners take their mark. The official fires the gun, and the runners all head in different directions. One group runs towards the west. Another likes the mountains and runs towards the north. And the third heads east towards the sea. Well, besides the entertainment value in this, it would be crazy. Only those headed towards the finish line have any chance of winning the prize. Paul also states that he isn't a boxer who merely beats the air, like a shadow boxer. This is a training technique where a boxer throws punches at an imaginary opponent. It's a good training tool, but inadequate when it comes to actual boxing when someone hits you back. Here is Paul's point. Some Christians are great shadow boxers. They make loud noises about our faith and when they're in church, But when they get out into the real world, the boxing ring, they never land a blow for Christ. In fact, many of us are so ill-prepared that we are sitting ducks for the sucker punches landed by those who deny the faith. Yet Paul informs us that only those who stay in the ring, duke it out, and make every blow count qualify for the crown. Like Paul, we need to be motivated by the gripping thought of standing before Jesus Christ and giving an account of our earthly lives. We live in such a way to please the Lord, because living for God's approval requires finishing well. In Alice in Wonderland, there is a scene where Alice asks Cheshire Cat, "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" The cat replies, "That depends a great deal on where you want to go." Alice says, "I don't much care where." And the cat replies, "Then it doesn't matter which way you go." Alice says that she just wants to get somewhere, and Cheshire Cat tells her, "Oh, you're sure to do that if you only walk long enough." You see, we are certain to end up somewhere. Everyone does. The important question you must ask yourself is, where am I going? Well, Paul concludes this paragraph by expressing a sincere fear that he himself could fail to win the prize. And if the Apostle Paul has that fear, maybe we need to be concerned as well. Instead of running aimlessly or shadow boxing, Paul makes this contrasting statement. "No, I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize." With the judgment seat of Christ in mind, Paul writes, "I beat my body and make it my slave." The word translated beat literally means to strike under the eye or to beat black and blue. Paul beats his body into submission, doing all that he could to ensure his success. He deliberately gives himself a black eye, so to speak, thus bringing his body into slavery. Many people, including most Christians, are slaves to their bodies. Their bodies tell their minds what to do. Their bodies decide when to eat, what to eat, how much to eat, when to sleep and get up, and so on. But an athlete cannot allow that. He follows the training rules, not his body. He runs when he would rather be resting. He eats a balanced meal when he would rather have a chocolate sundae. He goes to bed when he would rather stay up. And he gets up early to train when he would rather stay in bed. An athlete leads his body. He does not follow it. It is his slave, not the other way around. Now, many of us hate the word discipline as much as self-control. Yet Paul says both are necessary. Being disciplined in your Christian life means measuring everything you do by the goal of pleasing Christ. Discipline means asking yourself, is what I'm doing right now going to help me win my Christian race later? If you struggle with discipline, you're not alone. Perhaps you need to consider a workout routine and some training partners. Whether we realize it or not, each of us needs some spiritual workout partners or a coach. We need to be pushed, stretched, and held accountable. If we don't have someone like this in our lives, we will never be all that God intended us to be. This is a key reason why many churches have growth groups. We need a workout partner or coach so that after serving Christ, we will not be dealt a black eye of disqualification. Now the question that looms before us is, what did Paul mean by the term disqualified? Well, to be disqualified simply means disapproved. It means not standing the test. Paul's fear was not that he might lose his salvation, but that he might not persevere in his Christian life and ministry. In Paul's mind, there's a difference between acceptance and approval. Acceptance is the result of a one-time act of faith. Approval is the result of ongoing faithfulness. God promises us his unconditional acceptance, but he does not promise us his unconditional approval. As a father, I will always accept my children, but I may not always approve of their behavior. This is also true in our relationship with God. As we contemplate the issue of God's approval, we must recognize that Paul had four specific disqualifying sins in mind as he was writing these four verses. How do I know that? Notice the first word in chapter 10 in verse 1, the word four. That little word four is a bridge that continues Paul's warning. The sins that Paul identifies are idolatry in verse 7, immorality in verse 8, testing God in verse 9, and grumbling against God in verse 10. Each of these sins was enough to keep Israel from finishing their race and winning the prize. They can do the same to us today if we do not continue to seek Christ's approval. And we'll look more closely at these in next week's message. For Paul, his ultimate goal was the approval of Christ. As his death was quickly approaching, he had these words for young Timothy. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. The phrase translated, I have fought, is one word in the Greek. Interestingly, it is a form of the same word that was used in verse 25 that was translated, competes in the games. Both of these passages deal with the doctrine of eternal rewards. Another interesting piece of information is 1 Corinthians was one of the earlier books that Paul wrote, and 2 Timothy was the last. What's my point? Paul finished his course because he kept his eyes fixed on the prize. Paul realized that living for God's approval requires finishing well. In 1986, the New York City Marathon, almost 20,000 runners entered this famous race. What is memorable about it is not who won, but rather who finished last. His name is Bob Wyland. He finished 19,413th, dead last. Bob completed the New York City Marathon in, are you ready for this? 4 days, 2 hours, 48 minutes, and 17 seconds. Unquestionably, the slowest marathon runner in history ever. Well, what makes Bob Wyland's story so special? Well, it's because Bob ran with his arms. 17 years earlier, when he was serving as a soldier in Vietnam, Bob's legs were blown off in a battle. When he runs, Wieland sits on a 15-pound saddle and covers his fists with pads. He runs with his arms. At his swiftest, Bob can run about 1 mile an hour, using his muscular arms to push his torso forward one step at a time. Bob Wieland finished 4 days after the start. What did it matter? Why bother to finish? Here's why. There is great reward in just finishing the course. Well, this morning, like Bob Wieland, we can finish well. If we follow the example of the Apostle Paul and countless others who we can finish well. Therefore, my challenge for all of us today is to live for God's approval by finishing well.